Funding for Here and Now Anytime comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Hi, this is Here and Now Anytime, where we give you a little news, a little something you weren't expecting, and always a fresh, in-depth perspective on current events, arts and culture, and stories that matter. Subscribe or follow to get all our episodes out every weekday. And if you like what you hear, tell a friend about us to help spread the word. Now here's the show.
She was the cheat code. Like once that happened, once we bonded over that, it was easy. I mean, that is the magic. That is the real effect of Caitlin Clark.
Whatever happens to the Hawkeyes in March Madness, Caitlin Clark is already a champion in the eyes of one family. And they're not even Iowans. It's Tuesday, March 19th, and this is Here and Now Anytime from NPR and WBUR Boston. I'm Chris Bentley. Today on the show, we're not going to help you fill out your bracket, but we've got a rundown of the NCAA basketball tournament starting this week, including a chat with a dad who says Caitlin Clark helped him connect with his young daughters. Also, billion-dollar video game behemoths are getting shown up by unexpected smash hits from smaller studios.
And it's a sign that many of the sure bets that business executives at these big companies were counting on aren't quite as solid as they thought, and that there's always room for an upstart.
That's coming up in about 20 minutes. But first, yesterday we mentioned the latest warnings of imminent famine in Gaza. Hunger and malnutrition are already widespread there. And now the leading authority on food insecurity, known as the IPC, says half of Gaza's population could be in a deadly famine by July. Aid groups are urging Israel to stop restricting the flow of goods into Gaza, including food. For a closer look at the situation, we called up James McGoldrick. He's the United Nations Humanitarian Coordinator for Palestine. And he spoke to Deepa Fernandez.
You know, I have to say, Jamie, we've been hearing that Gaza's on the brink of famine for quite some time now. Is that what you're seeing on the ground?
Well, I think the situation can't be a surprise to anyone. We've had ample warning of what might happen. And in the case of certain parts, like including the north, people living in very squalid and unsanitary conditions with little access to hospitals and health services, it's no wonder that IPC figures that those measurements have been taken. So it's, when I go to Gaza in the north and I go elsewhere, I'm shocked at how people are able to survive given the conditions they find themselves in.
And right now, what are you hearing from people about what they need most?
I mean, obviously, people want the end to the war and want to be able to try to go back home. But I think the situation quite sees that people want to just have a regular supply of food because we're just in a survival mode right now until such times as things get better. And it can only get better if there's a ceasefire or some sort of halt to this current military invasion and military activity.
So, Jamie, how do you work with Israel to get those food trucks across the border? We've heard about the thousands lined up there just sitting. What's your relationship with Israeli officials like? You know, we know things are tense in general between Israel and the UN.
Yeah, no, but in terms of operations, I mean, we have many different parts of the system to work with, and they're not always necessarily on the same page, and they're not necessarily always aligned to what we're trying to achieve. You know, and we also face the situation where you've got an underside inspection system that, you know, that keeps aid snarled up in the case of the many trucks that are backed up. We can't get them through. There's only the processing ability of 250 trucks a day, and that's on a good day. And we need 500 plus trucks a day. So we really struggle, and that's a constant battle with the Israeli authorities to get them to be much more permissive in terms of what we're really looking for, which is more access to the roads and more trucks to come in.
You know, very bluntly, the UN has called starvation a war crime. And I'm wondering, can that come up in discussions? Does it come up in discussions with Israeli officials as a way to try and urge them to move the aid through quickly?
And they see the media themselves and they're conscious of it. And they know that the ICJ report, which came out month or so ago, it highlighted some of the need for enhanced humanitarian assistance. And we don't use that in our conversation, but that's something that's part of the backdrop. What we're more conscious of is the fact that we have to get more trucks in. And they understand that because they've got a figure, even in the mediation efforts that are ongoing in Qatar, Israel's put down a marker of 500 trucks. They know that's what will satisfy the current level of humanitarian needs inside Gaza. And it's up to us then to work with them to get them to be much more helpful.
And I guess that's really the question, Jamie. What is it going to take when you say work with them? You know, I imagine a collegial relationship where you're sitting at a table discussing how many trucks will go in today. But the European Union's foreign policy chief, Joseph Borrell, said yesterday that Israel is using starvation as a weapon of war. Those were his words. We've heard for months now Israel saying it needs to check the food aid trucks for weapons before they enter, and that it wants to ensure the aid doesn't get to Hamas, among other justifications. But what needs to really happen to push them to either open more border crossings, you know, perhaps in the north, so that the trucks don't have to travel all the way north over roads that don't exist anymore because they're rubble?
What we need to do is open up more crossing points in the north. We've got a very limited scanning ability for those trucks to be measured and to be looked at and inspected by the Israelis. So if we open up Ashdod in the north, which has scanning facilities, we open up Allenby in the Jordan, we have a corridor coming from there, which has Israeli scanning facilities. And then we have Kerem Shalom. Collectively, all of those will reach an amount of food that we can use the three roads going north to south, south to north, which will help us deliver.
And why is Israel not opening those crossings, especially given they have the scanning equipment that would make this aid delivery expedited?
Well, they think there's enough going in. They keep saying that. But, you know, the fact that they know that 250 trucks go in, and prior to October the 7th, there were 700 trucks were getting processed a day in Kerem Shalom, and they were getting processed but not scanned. Now they get scanned laboriously, 20 minutes per truck, and it slows things down. And on a good day, you get 250 trucks. So we would need the additional scanning capacity. And then if we open up the three roads, we've got the opportunity to serve the populations who are in need. Until we have that, we're always going to be in this situation where we're scrambling to get the goods and the aid to the people and to fill the gap between what's needed and what we have.
So, Jamie, what could the United States do here?
Well, I think the US is in a prime position, actually, to have some leverage over the Israeli government and to get them, for example, not to go ahead with the Rafah incursion and for them to push to open up more entry points for aid into the north and obviously to open the roads up in the north inside the Gaza Strip. But not just open them up, take away the mines, take away the unexploded ordnance and level the roads in such a way that we can use the trucks and the vehicles in a much quicker and efficient way.
Yeah. Jamie McGoldrick, United Nations Humanitarian Coordinator for Palestine. Thank you for making time for us, sir.
Thank you.
For more reporting on the war and the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, you can always follow npr.org/Middle East. And today on our website, we've got a conversation with the father of Itai Chen, a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen who was killed on October 7th.
We need to come to terms with the fact that we will not see our son alive again. It's a very painful statement to say.
You can find that and much more at hereandnow.org. Coming up next, March Madness is on, but in some households, maybe it should be called Clark Chaos, after the Iowa phenom, Caitlin Clark. After the break, Robin Young has a preview of the men's and women's tournaments, as well as a chat with a father who's been following Clark's remarkable season with his daughter. Stick around.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's teladochealth/whatsyourwhy.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Betterment, an automated investing and savings app. CEO Sarah Levy shares why Betterment believes cash can be a strategic choice.
There are times when the market is volatile, when customers are a little nervous about investing. We came to understand that there was an opportunity to introduce cash as part of an investing strategy and to give back yields to the customer.
Learn more about high-yield cash accounts at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance not guaranteed. Cash reserve offered through Betterment LLC and Betterment Securities. Betterment is not a bank.
March Madness tips off tonight. The NCAA's all-or-nothing basketball tournament. Future stars of the NBA and WNBA facing off. Who can forget Larry Bird and Magic Johnson in 1979? Well, apparently everybody that I'm looking at around me who wasn't born yet. And one of those, you know, the playoffs weren't called March Madness until 1982 when Brent Musburger used the term. But anywho, here we go. On the men's side, the reigning champion UConn Huskies, top seed. In the women's competition, it's hard to look past the Iowa Hawkeyes with Caitlin Clark in her last March Madness before going to the WNBA. Unless, of course, you're looking at South Carolina. So let's bring in Lauren Tuscola from the sports news site The Gist. She's in studio with us. Men, UConn, improbable winners a year ago, favored this year. Are they worth the praise?
I think they're definitely worth the praise. They ran through the Big East, which is one of the most competitive men's tournaments. But you can't overlook number one Purdue as well. They have the expected player of the year in Zach Edey. They had a big upset last year. They got bounced in the first round of the tournament. So I'm looking at Purdue as well, in addition to UConn.
And who else? Just give us one more.
Underdog to watch out for is Creighton. So they're one of the few teams that upset UConn this year during the regular season. So if you need a number three seed, there's always chaos in the men's bracket. I would take a look at Creighton as well.
Okay, that's enough of the men. Let's go to the women. The biggest star without question, Caitlin Clark, top scorer in NCAA Division I history. She and her Iowa team are a one seed. But wait, you know, we know the betting odds are with the undefeated South Carolina women. There's LSU, returning champions. Take a look.
The women's tournament is so deep this year. I'm really excited about it. Like you said, number one, South Carolina. This is the third straight year they're the number one overall seed. Back-to-back regular season undefeated run. So South Carolina is another team to beat. Another one, number two, Stanford. They were upset in the Pac-12 tournament, but they're in that mix for that number one seed. So there's just so much talent on the women's side. It's going to be a really exciting tournament.
Right. And the women's tournament broke viewership records last year. Now you've got Caitlin Clark, you know, the Taylor Swift of basketball right now. Do you think we'll see even bigger numbers? And what is this, you know, it is the NCAAs, but what is it meaning in a bigger way for women's basketball?
This is huge for women's basketball. Like you said, outstanding viewership numbers across the board. And we're heading into the WNBA season, so we'll see Caitlin Clark make that jump to the WNBA. I'm expecting the viewership to be shattered this time around. We're seeing that March Madness branding. There's so much support. There's so many superstars to watch. So I think the viewership numbers are going to be through the roof, and it's really exciting time for women's hoops.
Okay, we got a little time here. Just on the men's side first, one player, somebody who's new to this might look for, and then on the women's side besides Caitlin.
Besides Caitlin, yeah. So Zach Edey is really that player to watch on the men's side. He's 7'5", so when
you can't miss him.
You cannot miss him on the court. You'll see him out there. When he gets the ball, you're expecting him to score. So Zach Edey, he's expected to go to the NBA as well. So definitely the player to watch for the men's. And then on the women's side, there are so many to choose from. I'm going to go with Hannah Hidalgo from Notre Dame, number two Notre Dame.
Right. You can't forget Notre Dame on the women's side.
So competitive. There are a lot of freshmen to watch. So the women's game is going to be really deep for years to come. But Hannah Hidalgo, she's a freshman leading that Notre Dame team. I'll look out for her too.
And Caitlin Clark, who from the season past, who might give her the most trouble as an individual?
As an individual, there's always that competition with Angel Reese. That's right. The rematch of last year's national championship game. So those two, the trash talk between them, that's always one to watch. And they're in the same quadrant this year, so that might be an early matchup.
I love the trash talk. The Gist, Lauren Tuscola, with a quick preview. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Lots of new young eyes following March Madness this year because of Caitlin Clark. Here's the call as she shattered a record.
Here comes Clark. How will she go for history? There it is! The all-time leading scorer in women's college basketball.
And Caitlin Clark also broke the men's record held by Pete Maravich. One fan letter to her caught our eye. It was from Minnesota pediatric otolaryngologist Dr. Asita Jayawardena, a note to Clark in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. In it, he thanked her for helping him out of the rut of his own fatherhood. Dr. Jayawardena, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, what a note you wrote. So start with a little bit about you and your relationship to basketball. We understand you're a first-generation Sri Lankan immigrant and 5'4". So maybe not a deep relationship with basketball.
My relationship with basketball has been watching basketball.
But when I did play, you know, when I was in middle school, I was just terrible. but I fell in love with basketball through Michael Jordan, this guy who, you know, was cut from his high school team that then went on to become the greatest of all time basketball player. It really inspired me that, you know, you can do anything.
Yes. Although before that, you write you were playing NBA video games with a cheat code. Also, you know, as a young man, you're dreaming of and thinking about being a father. And how did that look to you?
You know, I've always wanted to be a dad. When I imagined that, particularly as a young kid, I was super excited to teach what I imagined to be a son, to teach them sports and to teach them some of those lessons I learned in sports. It wasn't that I didn't want a daughter. I just didn't put much thought into it. Just that imaginary kid I was teaching was always a boy.
And then here they come, two girls.
Two absolutely wonderful, beautiful, amazing little girls. I love it.
Yeah. But you say it was hard to connect.
Yeah, this is the hardest question to answer, honestly. I've always had a wonderful bond with my daughter. It's just that the things that we did together were painting each other's fingernails and playing with dolls. And when I thought about the bond that I wanted to have with her into the future, it was building that confidence, that fierce, independent little girl that believes that she can do anything. And I didn't have the way to feel like I could connect with her in that way until Caitlin Clark came along. She was the cheat code. Like, once that happened, once we bonded over that, it was easy. And it's not as if I'm giving these lessons during these daddy-daughter dates. Like, this is all happening
organically.
She's making these connections the same way that I did when I was a little boy. Mm. I mean, that is the magic. That is the real effect of Caitlin Clark.
A cheat code. That's great. Your oldest daughter is 5, then you've got a toddler. Did she discover Caitlin Clark first? What happened?
You know, what happened is we went to the Big Ten, and this was last year, and my eldest daughter, I could just see how she was engaging and connecting to this girl who had a ponytail, who everybody was talking about, that was just doing amazing. And so then I was like, well, we're going to go to the next game, which was the final. So we went to the Big Ten final last year. That was our very first Caitlin Clark daddy-daughter date. I mean, she had a blast. And we talked about it. We talked about basketball and learning and practice and being a teammate and all these things. And I just made it a point from there on out. I was like, you know, anytime Caitlin's on TV, I'm going to try to be intentional and watch this with my daughter.
Tell us more about what that sounds like. I mean, was she turning to you and saying, wow, she took the 3-pointer from the logo? I mean, you know, what is her sense of team play? What is she saying to you?
You know, she says that stuff now that we've watched a lot of basketball. But at the beginning, it was like, Daddy, I like Caitlin Clark because we saw her play and there was a lot of confetti and she danced around and raised the trophy up with the rest of her teammates. And that was so cool. And that was what she cared about. And I tried to explain to her, like, throughout the course of this season, Caitlin Clark just scored the most points ever of any girl, now ever of any boy. And she was like, cool, Dad. Like, you know, like, that didn't matter to
her. Was there confetti?
Right. She's like, I want to see her, you know, smile. And Caitlin plays, like, in such a free way. She's tossing the ball to all of her teammates, and they just have such an energy about them that it's contagious. And if you're a little girl watching that, like, it's easy to be inspired by that.
Yeah.
So since that game last year, I was like, well, I need to go anytime Caitlin Clark is in town. So I got tickets to go see the Iowa-Minnesota game. And, you know, she was just so excited. I remember it was super cold and we had a long walk to get to the stadium and she was just like happy and skipping. And we sat down at the game and it was like, we were both just mesmerized by her.
Yeah.
We watched her taking her warm-up shots. And, you know, then there was a moment where she hit a three and she turned to me and said, Daddy, that's a shot she works hard on in practice, right? That's why she hits it in the game. And this was something we had talked about before. And I was just like, wow, this is just wonderful. Yeah. This is so cool.
We asked you not to pull your child out of school and bring her to surgery with you, but we asked you to record a little bit with her. Let's listen. Mm-hmm.
Do you like Caitlin Clark?
Mm-hmm. I love Caitlin Clark.
Me too.
She practiced a lot.
So obviously, there's this impact. I mean, you write that at that game, you watch Caitlin Clark stick around and sign everybody's jersey, including your daughter's. So she's had this impact on your daughter. I mean, can you come up with words?
Yeah, confidence is the main one. And also the belief that you can do anything. And that, to me, is how I've seen my daughter grow just by watching her. She's realized that, yeah, Caitlin can do anything on the basketball court. And the reason she can do that is because she works as a team. Her team helps her do it. You know, she practices a lot.
Yeah.
We watch her practice. And so these are things that are just happening in my own daughter's mind as we're watching her play.
Right. Here's Caitlin Clark reacting to a French reporter asking her, does she know that girls in Europe are watching her too?
I think it's really cool, obviously. Like, it's hard for me to kind of wrap my head around having an impact globally. And obviously, that's my goal and that's my dream. That's always what I want to do.
Perhaps dream accomplished. But what would you want to tell her about her impact on you, the dad?
There's no words that can describe how thankful I am to Caitlin for giving me this opportunity to connect with my own little girl. What Caitlin has done for me and my family transcends sports. I don't have the words to thank her.
Dr. Asita Jayawardena, a pediatric otolaryngologist at Children's Minnesota, and also a dad. I'm sure you and the girls are ready for that first jump ball.
Absolutely. Wouldn't miss it.
Well, thank you. And your daughter concurs.
The best part is that we go as a family always.
Well, Asita joked about needing a cheat code for basketball video games. Our next guest needs no cheat codes. It's our own James Mastro Marino, and he's here with the latest and greatest in video games, including how a game that's been called a Pokemon ripoff is kind of beating Pokemon at its own game. It's Games with James when we return.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Betterment, an automated investing and savings app. CEO Sarah Levy shares why accessibility is central to Betterment's mission.
The real innovation for Betterment was taking a set of tools that were used by the ultra wealthy and making them accessible to the average investor. And that includes tech strategies, that includes dollar cost averaging. These are all sort of tricks of the trade.
Learn more about automated investing technology at Betterment.com. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Bluehost. Try Bluehost Cloud, the hosting plan made for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, fast load times, and 24/7 support, your sites can handle high traffic spikes. Visit Bluehost.com.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Bombas. Bombas makes absurdly soft socks, underwear, and T-shirts. And for every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness. Get 20% off your first purchase at bombas.com/NPR and use code NPR.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
Some of this year's biggest video games are complete underdogs. The head of the small Japanese company behind Pal World, for example, told Bloomberg he doesn't know what to do with all the money they've made. And then there's Helldivers 2, which couldn't keep up with player counts so high that it crashed the game servers. So for more on this and the year's biggest games so far, we're joined by Here and Now producer and NPR gaming lead James Mastro Marino for a little segment we're calling Games with James. Hey, James.
Hey, Chris.
So the elevator pitch, I gather, for Pal World is Pokemon with guns, which sounds a little outrageous, and it's been called outrageous, but is it really that outrageous?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it's not just that you have these cute characters running around. You can also put them to work in factories to produce guns and other armaments for you as you wander around this really beautiful, colorful world. And actually, it was Katie Klein, who used to be our Here and Now intern, has since gone on to do many wonderful things, including report on games for Morning Edition, that sat down with me to give me this summary.
So it's basically like a regular survival game where you'll punch trees to get wood, you'll punch rocks to get rocks, and you have a hunger bar that you need to fill, and you build a base. And then there's like this Pokemon aspect of it too, where you have all these little creatures that look very suspiciously like Pokemon, but they're called pals, and you can, you know, capture them in balls very similar to Pokemon. And then you can kind of have them speed up your process with gathering all the materials that you need to gather and just become stronger by using this kind of forced labor of the pals.
While I will say that you can be the absolute worst sort of evil capitalist boss, Katie Klein wants me to let you know that she is a very nice boss. She treats all of her pals well and makes sure they all get enough breaks.
Okay, duly noted. I would expect no less of a former Here and Now intern.
She learned from the best, Chris.
Okay, suspiciously like Pokemon, she said. So is Nintendo or is the Pokemon company taking kindly to that?
Well, they immediately took down a player-created mod that actually replaced the in-game pals with actual Pokemon. And they've said that they're interested in protecting their intellectual property. And Pokemon is the most valuable IP in the world. It surpasses even Disney characters in that regard. So, yes, they're interested, even if copyright law seems to mostly be on Palworld's side here.
What do you think of the game, James?
Yeah, so I've dabbled in the game. I haven't gone as deep as Katie has. She's basically maxed out everything that you can do in the game right now. And I'd say that it's very clear why this is so attractive to so many people. I got on and started to try to play with others. I'll let you know that this game is as bright and colorful as something that Nintendo has put together, and it runs better than the last Nintendo games on the Switch, which accounts for a lot of its popularity. People are hungry for creature collecting, Minecraft-style survival and building mechanics, and they got this in this massive world that you can play with your friends, and if you had an Xbox Game Pass subscription, you could play it through that for free as part of the subscription. So that accounts for a lot of its runaway popularity at the very beginning of the year. And the other part of it is that it's controversial. People are afraid that Nintendo might get a cease and desist against it any day now because of its similarities to Pokemon designs. And then they were deliberately courting controversy by contrasting these cute animal characters with actual gun combat, even though it's not a bloody game. It's not like Grand Theft Auto or anything. It just also happens to have guns, which, as we know, are endemic in games anyway.
Okay, that's Palworld. And then there's Helldivers 2, which, if you remember the 90s movie Starship Troopers, which was based on a 1959 novel, this is like that, but a 2024 video game. And here's a little bit from that.
Join the Helldivers. Become part of an elite peacekeeping force. See exotic new life forms. And spread managed democracy throughout the galaxy. Become a hero.
Yes, I definitely see the similarities just from hearing that and seeing that clip because I love the 90s movie. And when they say, see exotic new life forms, they immediately kill the exotic new life form. So some of the satire from the Paul Verhoeven flick from the 90s. But I've been hearing a lot about this game. I haven't played it. So, James, what do you think? Why did it take off so much?
Well, it makes Paul Verhoeven look subtle, I will say. It's like, but the reason why it's taken off so much is it's the sort of cooperative game, and it's a similar story to Palworld in that way, that people have been really hungry for. Like, around the same time, this massive game called Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League came out. It was supposed to be the big follow-up to an immensely successful Batman series of games, and it completely flopped because it didn't cater to gamers the way they wanted it to. It felt really predatory and half-baked. And then Helldivers, which is from a much smaller team and had much more modest ambitions, was so successful that for the first 2 weeks it was out, I couldn't play it. I tried to sign in, and so many people were trying to log into this multiplayer online game that the servers were completely full and I couldn't do it. When I eventually did, I realized exactly why people like this. I mean, it's got that campy satire that you could expect, and it's just good, wholesome fun with your friends. You can have up to four people in a match together. You're always given an objective to go and kill some aliens or Terminator robots or whatever it is. It's very tropey in that way. But the mechanics make it such that there are just so many moments of, like, hilarity. So, for example, you can call down drop supplies that come in these like big pods. But you can throw these anywhere on the map, and within seconds, something will come down and smoosh whatever is underneath it, including your friends. So this frequently happens, where you'll accidentally cause some casualty and have to revive someone through another dropship revival, which will then create another death. You'll throw a grenade, and then it'll accidentally bounce off of something and then hit your friend, and then the grenade they're holding will drop, which will hit you. And then in the end, nobody succeeded, and you're overwhelmed by bugs, but everybody is laughing because it's that ridiculous of a setup. And since this is video games, I mean, nobody's particularly scandalized that this kind of violence is happening, because it's all set in this, like, again, absurd, campy, satirical space future.
Yeah, some zany violence for spreading managed democracy. So, James, we're talking about underdogs. What about the bigger companies, the Ubisofts, the Nintendos, the Sonys of the world? What have they been up to lately?
Yeah, there have been some really surprising big budget flops this year. Ubisoft put out a pirate game called Skull and Bones, which is pretty much a sinking ship a month after release. And then Sony saw immense success with Helldivers, which they helped fund. It's even kind of showing up their huge title, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. There's this tiny poker game called Balatro that's doing incredible numbers, even as Nintendo's Pokemon is getting outclassed by Palworld, really showing that people want this kind of open-world crafting, creature-collecting game that Nintendo really hasn't been able to deliver. And it's a sign that many of the sure bets that business executives at these big companies were counting on aren't quite as solid as they thought, and that there's always room for an upstart.
Well, I'm always behind the times on video games, I think, so I'm still playing the first Final Fantasy VII Remake, not Rebirth yet, but I'm sure I'll get around to it eventually. James Mastromarino of Here and Now and NPR and the Substack, Games with James. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
That'll do it for us today. Here and Now Anytime comes from the team behind Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. Today's stories were produced by Sam Rapelson, Karen Miller-Medson, and newlywed Thomas Danielian. Congratulations. Today's editors were Todd Munt, Ahmad Daman, Peter O'Dowd, and Micaela Rodriguez. Technical direction from Mike Moschetto, Caleb Green, and Michaela Varela. Mike Moschetto also wrote our theme music, along with Max Liebman and me, Chris Bentley. Our digital producers are Allison Hagen and Grace Griffin, and the executive producer of Here and Now is Carlene Watson. Thanks for listening. Good luck filling out those brackets, and we'll be back with you tomorrow.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, the NPR Wine Club. Get the world of wine delivered to your door. When you join the NPR Wine Club, you'll receive the stories behind every bottle and favorite NPR shows and personalities arriving in liquid form, like Weekend Edition Cabernet and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Zinfandel. The NPR Wine Club is a delicious way to support NPR's programming. If you're 21 or older, uncork a special offer at nprwineclub.org/podcast. This message comes from NPR sponsor Capella University. With Capella's FlexPath learning format, you can earn your degree online at your own pace and get support from people who care about your success. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
On NPR's Throughline,
we cannot function for 24 hours without cobalt, because it's in our smartphone, our tablet, our laptop. And as a consequence, the lives of the people living in that part of the Congo descended into just a catastrophe.
Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.